This is the Morning Magazine for July 18th of 2022. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's program, we'll hear from Senator Michael Bennett about his new Smart Community Policing Act and efforts to fund Colorado wildfire risk reduction and renewable energy. And CityCast Denver sits down with local author Jenny Shank, whose most recent book, Mixed Company, recently won a Colorado Book Award for Best Fiction. At the bottom of the hour, we'll hear the BBC News headlines and then the Hightower Lowdown. After that is Good Ol' CU with Joe Uhas. Then at 9 a.m., we'll bring you Counterspin, a look at fairness and accuracy in reporting. After that, Shauna Sprouls will be in the Boulder studio for the Morning Sound Alternative. All that's still ahead this morning, but first, these headlines with KGNU's Chiara De Mare.
A heat advisory will be in effect across the Front Range today, starting at 10 a.m. till at least 9 p.m. tonight. The temperature is forecasted to reach up to 105 degrees in some parts of the Denver metro area. The National Weather Service is advising residents to drink plenty of fluids, seek shelter in air-conditioned spaces, stay out of the sun, and check up on relatives and neighbors. Police open-fired in Denver's Entertainment District Saturday night. KGNU's Lily Noble reports.
In pursuit of what they say was an armed suspect, police opened fire in a crowded bar area of Denver's Entertainment District Saturday night. Multiple sources say the target, Jordan Waddy, had a gun but did not fire it. At the scene, police fired at 21-year-old Waddy, who was injured and is expected to recover. Denver police say they are investigating whether bullet fragments from the police's shots injured 5 bystanders. The 3 officers who opened fire, whose names have not been released, were placed on administrative leave, according to the Colorado Sun. This is standard practice in a pending investigation. The Colorado Bureau of Investigation, Colorado State Patrol, and Denver Office of the Independent Monitor are assisting with the investigation into the shooting. The Denver District Attorney's Office is also investigating the shooting. For KGNU, I'm Lily Noble.
A group of Louisville residents protested Saturday against a tax for those who lost their homes to the Marshall Fire. They say the use tax disproportionately burdens the 550 Marshall Fire victims. According to the Daily Camera, Louisville's use tax is intended to fund rebuilding efforts, but protesters notice that the tax revenues have also gone to funding the city's open spaces, recreation center, and historical sites. Fire victims said they now must pay over $20,000 on average in use taxes, which protesters cited as an unfair burden for the 6% of residents who lost their homes. A petition that gained over 1,100 signatures proposed a rebate for those who independently rebuild their homes and a rebate on all use tax funds that went to broader city purposes, rather than directly towards rebuilding homes. The use tax is expected to be a topic of discussion at the scheduled Louisville City Council meeting tomorrow evening. The Lions Art Festival has returned after a 2-year COVID-19 hiatus. Boulder County Arts Alliance, Lions Arts and Humanities Commission, and the Town of Lyons all collaborated to bring this event back. The festival drew nearly 40 artists and several food trucks to the Lyons, Farmette, and Riverbend space. Former Lyons Arts and Humanities Commission board member Misty Brackett told the Daily Camera, "Lyons is basically an art town. Whether it's visual art or music, art is the weft of Lyons, and it's important we get back out and reconnect with the arts." A fire in Red Feather Lakes prompted evacuation orders in northern Colorado Sunday night. The fire started in a cabin, and it spread to a second cabin, and then burned about 100 feet into open space before firefighters contained the burn area. There are no reported injuries, and residents were allowed to return to their homes after a 3-hour mandatory evacuation. A plane crashed in Left Hand Canyon on Sunday morning, killing at least one of its 4 passengers and starting a small fire. According to the Colorado Sun, a Cessna T-337G crashed about 21 miles west of Boulder at 9:30 a.m. An evacuation notice was put into place for surrounding residents that lasted at least an hour. The fire grew to 1 acre and was then put out. The identities of those on the plane have not been released yet. A jury acquitted former Chatfield High School athletic director Craig Auckland last week for failure to report child abuse charges. KGNU's Luis Lacone has more.
Jefferson County's high school athletics director Craig Auckland was accused of not reporting sexual misconduct between students last year, following a criminal summons accusing him of not meeting the state's mandatory reporting laws. Auckland resigned last fall. Auckland's attorney, Charles Nicholas, said Tuesday on behalf of Auckland, "This case highlights the inadequacies of Colorado's mandatory reporting laws, which are recognized by professionals on all sides of the issue." Both the principal of the high school and Auckland were put on administrative leave following the incident. For KGNU, I am Luis Licon.
It will be hot today in the Front Range, in the high 90s, with some rain showers. Make sure to stay hydrated. Today in Denver, we'll have a high of 100 and a low of 74. In Fort Collins, a high of 100 and a low of 64. And in Boulder, we have a low of 66 and a high of 99. Outside of the Boulder studio, it's 69 degrees. For KGNU, I'm Kiara DeMari.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. U.S. Senator Michael Bennett is up for re-election this year and will face Republican businessman Joe O'Day in the November midterms. Rocky Mountain Community Radio Gavin Dahl recently spoke with Senator Bennett on various initiatives, including his new Smart Community Policing Act and successful efforts to fund Colorado wildfire risk reduction, resilient forests, coal mine methane capture, and renewable energy.
Michael Bennett is a Democrat who represents Colorado in the United States Senate. It's great to speak with you again, Senator.
Thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate it, Kevin.
On Wednesday, you spoke on the Senate floor in favor of a new bill called the Supporting Mental Assistance Responder Teams, or SMART, Community Policing Act. We've seen successful mental health co-responder programs take off here on the Western Slope, including in Montrose and Grand Junction. What kinds of programs will be expanded or created by your legislation?
Essentially, what the bill does is respond to both the needs of law enforcement and communities. As you point out, Colorado, places ranging from Grand Junction to Denver and a lot of places in between, have had very good success with co-responder programs that allow police officers to focus on violent crime and dispatch mental health responders and other professionals to deal with issues that aren't violent crime. And, you know, Denver, for example, has dispatched thousands of people to do it. So these programs are working well. And all my bill does is say that local communities and states ought to be able to use the federal COPS money to fund these kinds of partnerships.
As for reconciliation, for folks who don't know, what does that mean and what are priorities for you in an upcoming package?
So reconciliation is a description of a budget process that allows for something to pass the Senate with 51 votes as opposed to the usual 60 votes. And in this package, what I've been most focused on is money for forest restoration, watershed protection, and for conservation for farmers and ranchers. There's $27 billion in the package for the forests, and there's $27 billion in there for conservation. And this would be the largest expenditure ever in our national forests. And what I've been pointing out to people here in Washington, D.C. is we're spending the money anyway. We're just spending it fighting fires. And if we did the maintenance, not only would our watersheds be much better protected, and not only would we create jobs on the landscape, but we might actually get to a point where, you know, there was less likelihood that we were having these massive wildfires every single summer. So that's what we're working on right now.
And then are you also able to make some effort around prescription drug prices with reconciliation?
Yeah. A big piece of that is we're trying to create a program where Medicare would for the first time be required to negotiate drug prices, which would reduce the cost of drugs for everybody. We also, if this bill is successful, would be capping seniors' out-of-pocket costs on drugs at $2,000. So that's a big piece of the bill, too.
So going back to forests, Colorado legislators secured more than $100 million in funding for projects around the state this year, thanks in part to your efforts. The Western Slope will benefit from funding for the Colorado Wildfire Risk Reduction and Resilient Forest Project. What will that, I think it's $3.6 million do?
Yeah, it was $3.6 million that we were able to get passed in the congressionally designated funding, and it's going to fund the treatment of 3,447 acres on non-federal lands in the Grand Mesa, Uncompahgre, and Gunnison National Forest, the White River National Forest, and Pike Santa Isabel National Forest to reduce wildfire risk to communities and as I said, to watersheds and critical infrastructure and diminish recovery costs. So I'm really glad that we were able to get that $3.6 million. It was one of 64 projects that we were able to get. Of the 64, I'm really proud to say 33 of those in over 20 communities are on the western slope of Colorado for a total of $53 million. You know, I think people on the west slope a lot of times feel like Washington's never paying any attention, and I'm very glad to see that they got a really good share of this funding. I mean, it's affordable housing projects in Craig and Glenwood Springs and Durango. We're replacing crumbling water infrastructure and increase access to clean drinking water in Rico and Walden and Minturn. We got money to improve public transportation and create greener fleets of buses in Eagle and Gunnison and Archuleta and La Plata County. And what the bill that we were talking about earlier, we also were able to increase access to mental and behavioral health services in Summit County, where that's one of the places they're doing the kinds of stuff that our new SMART bill is based on.
Well, and then I see that this also includes coal mine methane capture right nearby us in Coal Basin, and then also renewable energy projects up in Rangeley, I believe. So I just wonder, is, you know, as the list goes on of all these Western Slope projects, did you prioritize some of these rural projects based on your own travels and meeting with folks?
Absolutely. Literally every single one of those projects is the result of my being out in the state, meeting with people and having them tell me, in Rangeley, for example, that we need to have this project because we got to make our economy more resilient here, or in, you know, Minturn, listening to people say we're in danger of not being able to fight fires because our water pressure is so low because of the old water tank that we have. We're now replacing that. That's going to cost $2 million, and $1 million of that is coming from the federal government. And it also, I have to say, the applications from the West Slope were phenomenal, and people obviously put a lot of work into it, and we had a very rigorous process in my office, and I went through every single one of them to get to a place where we fought for our priorities. And I think it was also a very transparent process as well. We've got the result of that is that we now have the applications for the next year's already in the office, and we're already processing those.
Most of our listeners are familiar with your CORE Act, the Colorado Outdoor Recreation and Economy Act. You've been working on this for years. It was marked up in committee again recently. Are you expecting to have the chance to include the CORE Act in some kind of a public lands package this year?
If there is a public lands package this year, and for there to be one, and for it to be one that passes, it would have to be bipartisan. If there is one, I definitely hope the CORE Act is part of that. We've worked on the CORE Act for more than a decade. It has broad bipartisan support throughout western Colorado, and from the counties that are affected by the CORE Act, Democrats and Republicans have supported it. And it's been Washington's dysfunction that has made it impossible for us to get it passed. So I hope we're going to find a way to get it over the finish line one way or another. You know, I think a lot about the veterans that were trained at Camp Hale, went over and pushed the Germans out of northern Italy on their skis because that's what the guys learned how to do. Then they came back and they started our outdoor rec industry in Colorado. You know, these guys are not getting any younger, and there aren't many of them, frankly, that are still living. And I would like to see them see Camp Hale made a historic national landscape, you know, before they move on. I just think the idea that we're so dysfunctional, we can't figure that out. So I'm in particular on that. I think we've really got to find some way to do it. I'll mention that the fugitive methane work that you talked about, that also is part of the, you know, area, the Thompson Divide, which is in the CORE Act as well. So we're trying to work on this from every angle we can possibly work.
That was U.S. Senator Michael Bennett, a Democrat who represents Colorado in the U.S. Senate, speaking with Rocky Mountain Community Radio's Gavin Dahl. Thank you. Jenny Schenk grew up in southeast Denver, but when it was time for school, she was bused all over the city. From an elementary school with a Chicano-rooted curriculum on the west side to a predominantly black middle school near Five Points. And it was those experiences that informed her collection of short stories, Mixed Company. It explores all the awkward, comical, and challenging ways that very different kinds of Coloradans can find connection. The book has been awarded the George Garrett Fiction Prize and a Colorado Book Award since it was released last November, which is when CityCast host Bree Davies sat down with Schenk to talk about their shared history with Denver Public Schools.
Jenny Schenk, welcome to CityCast Denver.
Thank you for inviting me to CityCast Denver.
I feel like it's about time that we talk to each other and meet, because we've had such interesting, similar trajectories in our Colorado lives, I feel like.
I agree.
Because I think you worked at the AV Club. When did you work at the AV Club for The Onion?
It was 2000 to 2006.
Yeah, right before they had a Denver office, and I worked there too.
Yeah.
So, small world. So we're here to talk about your book, Mixed Company, and it's a collection of short stories that you've written over time, but there's definitely a theme to this collection. Can you talk about that theme?
Well, the theme of Mixed Company came about accidentally, because I guess I just always write stories about the same theme. But it's basically about people with differences of a number of kinds, different races, different native languages, different genders, different ages, things like that, trying to reach out to each other and connect in some way, whether that's your next door neighbor or the fellow students that you're bused to school with. I'm just interested in how people navigate those differences and don't just throw up their hands and walk away, but actually try to connect with each other.
So you just mentioned busing, and I really want to talk about it because one of your stories really reflected my own experience with busing to Denver schools. And the story centers on a white middle school student named Emily who's bused to a predominantly black neighborhood. She's trying to navigate conversations and relationships with black and brown kids at her school, but she just doesn't really have the framework to go about it. Why did you want to write about that particular experience?
So in that story, it's inspired by my time when I was bused from where I lived in Southeast Denver to Cole Middle School. The way busing worked for me, I was bused to a Latino neighborhood from first to third grade, and then they were bused to my elementary school from fourth to sixth grade. And then seventh grade, I went to a school with a totally new group of students. So I kind of portrayed in Emily that she lost half her friends in that transition, and she was trying to make a new friend, but it's kind of hard when you live on opposite sides of the city. And so she wasn't really sure how to go about it. She tried to befriend her locker partner because they set up locker partnerships with people on different sides of town. And her locker partner thinks she's kind of goofy, I think. But eventually, she comes to admire Emily's artistic skills.
Yeah, oh my gosh. I'm just having so many thoughts about my locker partner and who I was paired with. And we couldn't have been more different. You know, I was a white alternative girl that looked like Courtney Love. And my partner, Elizabeth, was this really amazing Chicana girl from El Paso, Texas, who was just the coolest person I'd ever met. But I was I wasn't even in her orbit, you know? And I loved that about Emily and Erica's relationship was Emily was trying and Erica was kind of yeah, whatever, welcome to school. But it was, I don't know, it was so real. So we've talked about it a little bit, but there's a couple stories in this collection that really deal with race. And I wonder, you're a white woman writing about race in 2021, and it is from the perspective of white folks. Why did you want to share that perspective or write from that place now?
I think I've been writing about race my whole writing career because of the way I grew up. I was bused all over the place starting when I was 6 years old. That's what was interesting about busing in Denver, because I think those kind of programs in a lot of places, they take children from the less affluent neighborhood and they bus them to the more affluent neighborhood and say, okay, you can benefit from our resources here. But that puts the people that are being bused in sort of a guest position. But in Denver, we were mixed around. We went both ways. And so I was a guest in other people's neighborhoods. And so when I went to Cheltenham Elementary, which was by the Old Mile High Stadium, it was a school that had a curriculum put in place during the Chicano rights movement, really. We had Aztec murals on the walls. We had a lot of stuff that was done in Spanish. You know, we had a mercado for Cinco de Mayo. And I had native teachers who told me like stories about haunted pueblos that I still remember to this day. And that was my first time I heard a ghost story. It was from my classmates. I heard of La Llorona, which is a story I never heard of from my family. So I feel like I was immersed in other cultures from when I was young. But I think about what you're asking a lot, because lately people have begun to realize how we lack stories from diverse perspectives, how they haven't been published and promoted and encouraged historically as much. And it's really, really important to put those forward as much as possible. And I try to do that too in my work as a teacher and a book reviewer and everything I do. I try to encourage people to read outside of their perspectives. There's this really great book of literary criticism called White Flights by Jess Rowe. And he observes that it seems like a lot of times white writers who are writing stuff in diverse settings have just eliminated all the non-white people in their stories, pretended that they are not there. And as a book reviewer, what I'm seeing is a lot of white writers setting stories in time periods and places where there are no people of color, so they just don't have to worry about it. And for me, so that's, those are possible answers, I guess, but none of those is acceptable for me. I have to have everybody in my stories. That's why I called it mixed company. It's a mix of every kind of person, because that's what makes a story to me.
What's your describing in your own childhood, the experience of going to a school in a, you know, in a neighborhood with Chicano roots and learning about that. It's so different to me than the conversations that we often hear about Colorado and Denver. It's so white here. It's so white. And I think that that actually allows a lot of white folks to think that we don't have to talk about race and socioeconomics and these intersections. But you challenge that, I think. And you have those conversations with your characters. And I appreciate that in such an honest way to say, these are actual conversations we're having, especially among kids, you know? Like, I don't know. I went to Catholic school kindergarten through eighth grade, and it was predominantly white. So when I went to public school for high school, it was like I was learning, I was navigating a whole new social world and had no framework for it. And I saw that in so much of your characters.
For me, it was a different neighborhood every few years. So like I said, I went to that school that had kind of a Chicano rights curriculum. And then I went to Five Points. It was amazing because it was when NWA and Public Enemy were popular, but they were not played anywhere on the radio in Denver. So I was getting this music from my classmates who had played in the hallway. And I was like, what is this? You know, I was just immersed in this culture. And so it seemed like every few years I switched what culture I was immersed in. And it was great because I just got all these different stories, really.
This is reminding me of all the recent hoopla over critical race theory. Like, you and me grew up with busing and it gave us these experiences and exposure to different kinds of people. And the issue school boards are debating today is kind of the same. Which stories are our kids going to be exposed to? What do you think about that?
Stories are additive. They don't, like, telling an additional story does not subtract from the story that you like. It adds to it. It enhances it. And the more stories you can expose yourself to, the more rich your background and knowledge is going to be. And so that's what I felt like. I got an education when I went to the Denver Public Schools. That's what an education is. It's learning things you don't know that your family couldn't teach you, I think.
Yeah, and I think learning from our peers, you know? It's not just about going to school to learn from teachers. It's connecting with our peers and really learning about those differences in our families and how we grow up. And it is very apparent when we're, you know, we're shipped across town to another community and we don't really have a frame of reference or root in that community. We have to learn from each other. And that's why I think that's something that I think comes through in your stories. Again, even though they're fictional, I think they're a great introduction to some genuine Colorado experiences that might help folks understand our city and our state a little better.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Well, Jenny Schenk, thank you for joining me today.
That was a great time, Bree. Thank you for talking to me about my book.
You just heard an excerpt from CityCast Denver, the local Denver daily news podcast. Learn more about subscribing to the podcast at denver.citycast.fm or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's all the time we have for today's Morning Magazine. Special thanks to Chiara De Mare, Luis Licon, Lily Noble, Alexis Kenyon, Rosanna Longo-Better, Gavin Dahl, and Maeve Conran for their contributions.